You're Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is the Locked On NHL Podcast, your Tuesday edition. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres and Mike DiStefano from Locked On Leafs. Mike, it was hard to beat the weekend for the NHL, at least aesthetically. I still can't believe how beautiful the pictures are of that Lake Tahoe game.
That was awesome. It really was. And it was also kind of cool that we got to watch a nighttime game as well, right? I thought that even though we kind of get the best of both worlds, we got to see the cool lake and mountains in the background and the nice scenic look earlier. And then obviously the sun came out. Who would have guessed that? And kind of put a kibosh to the daytime game. But I also thought that it was really cool, just a really black background. I thought that it was there was like shadows on the ice. It was kind of cool. I enjoyed the nighttime outdoor game.
Yeah, me too. We'll get to Jack Eichel as a potential trade idea right now. There's been some rumors, I guess, is the way to phrase what's been said about him floating around. Artemi Panarin situation going on in New York. We'll get to also Calgary maybe ready to blow it up. And then me and Mike are going to have a conversation about who the next coach to be fired might be. And I've got a list of odds to kind of run down that as a framework of who the first coach of the season that will be fired will be. But while we're on this, did you see the story from Sportsnet that the NHL could revisit outdoor games at different potential, outdoor, nature looking backdrops? Like Lake Louise was mentioned, Park City, Utah was mentioned. Like, I don't know. How do you feel about the idea of them doing more of these?
I love it. Like, I thought it was so cool, and it makes sense, right? Do something different. Like, I mean, you can have, for hockey that wants to try and grow the sport, you got to be unique. You got to be, do something new to try and attract a different audience. And I think doing things like this is a good way to do that. Like NBC was fully on board in the States to have this Lake Tahoe game. Unfortunately, it kind of hit a bit of a snag and they had to do a real late night game. But still, they were fully on board because they knew that it was a new way to try and grab the attention of some of the more passive or maybe even non-hockey fans and show them like, hey, look, we're trying to do some new things here. This looks really cool. You want to come and take a look? And then hopefully they enjoy the product that's out there on the ice. They enjoy watching, Cale Makar and Nate MacKinnon tearing it up and then become hockey fans that way. So I think it's actually a really good idea to try and bring in a new crowd and it just looked totally aesthetically pleasing in Lake Tahoe. And you said Lake Louise is another option over in Alberta. I think that would be amazing. That is one place where I don't know if you've seen photos of it, but it looks stunning. Like I want to go to Lake Louise one day. And if there's a hockey game played there, oh my God, it would just be beautiful. Imagine the Battle of Alberta and Lake Louise. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I think that would be a really cool spot to do it next. I was looking up. I knew what Lake Louise looked like. I had seen pictures. I had to look up what Park City, Utah looked like. That was the other site that the report mentioned. It also is incredibly beautiful, but I do also like this idea. I think that just the uniqueness of the Stadium Series, the Winter Classic, just going to stadium after stadium has kind of lost its luster. And it really, to me, it's partially because the league has just oversaturated it with how many they did for 10 years. I mean, they were doing 5-6 in a season sometimes. And this is like bringing that spark back for me for these outdoor games. Like I was sitting down like to make sure I was watching that game. And I don't think I've done that with a Winter Classic. Man, at least in recent memory. I mean, like maybe there'll be times where I'll seek it out to like just see it at the beginning, but I'm not watching the game. And I was even watching the game after, like with the trees in the background, like it had me glued in. So I think the Lake Louise idea should definitely be next if they're going to do that. And I agree, that would be on my bucket list. You said you haven't been there?
No, I haven't been there, but one day I will get there. I mean, it's within Canada, so it's not too far away, I guess. I mean, I would have to fly, but
Canada though sometimes like it says it's in Alberta. I feel like that could mean It's 10 hours away, or it could be 25 hours away.
Way more than that. From here, from us, it'd probably take a couple of days to drive out there. Canada's a big place, especially going cross-country. You're going into the Rockies. That'd be quite the trip. You'd have to fly and then fly into, like, I don't know, up into Alberta somewhere and then drive from there. But one day I'll get there.
I have a friend at work whose son plays junior hockey, and he at one point had to go up to, is it North Bay, I think, in Ontario? And he told me how long a drive it was, and I was like blown away. Like, I definitely don't have the right mindset of how big Canada is, because it's crazy sometimes when you hear these distances. And yeah, Lake Louise, though, it's not, you know, it's nothing crazy. It's about an hour two, it says, from Calgary. So gettable. If the NHL wants to do that, for sure. All right, let's get to some stuff from on the ice. At least, actually, well, not quite yet on the ice, I guess, because I'm going to toss you this Jack Eichel trade comment from Elliot Friedman. Friedman, while on with the Instigators at WGR in Buffalo, was asked, like, directly, do you think there's a possibility that at some point Jack Eichel gets traded? His answer was quickly yes. Like, almost before the question was finished, he said yes. And then there was about 5-6 seconds of awkward dead silence, which was kind of funny to listen to. And then Friedman went on into greater detail. He did say that the Sabres had received offers this past offseason, but they were telling teams they just weren't ready to do this. And that doesn't necessarily mean they'll never be ready to do it, but last offseason they weren't ready to do it. And it's kind of the same old story with the Sabres. Like, Eichel is producing. He's not producing goals, but he is producing points. And the season is, like, it doesn't matter, I guess, how good Eichel's doing, because the Sabres just find themselves in last place. So how do you see this situation? Do you actually think there is a realistic possibility that he could be moved maybe as soon as this offseason?
Well, I think this is probably more a question that you could answer than I, someone who covers the team on a daily basis. But, you know, obviously it's been well documented that Eichel has shown frustration with the team's inability to win ever since getting to the organization. They've done a lot to try and win, but for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a culture thing, if it's the coaching staff, what it is, but they've gone through a few different coaches. They've made, you know, a bunch of different trades. They've made some good, well, I wouldn't say good signings, but they've opened up the checkbook and made some big signings, and none of it has seemed to work. And they still have not made the playoffs yet in Jack Eichel's tenure. You got to think that at some point he's going to wake up and say, hey, man, look, it's just not working here. You know, I'm getting, frustrated. I want to play in the playoffs. I want to chase the Stanley Cup. And it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen here in Buffalo. And eventually he may end up asking to get moved. And Buffalo, when you got a guy like that who just wants out, you may have to try and do it, because he would bring in a hefty, hefty return. And it could help set Buffalo up going forward. However, you know, will you get a player as good as Jack Eichel in a trade? Probably not. There's not too many of them in the NHL that are better than Jack Eichel. But at the end of the day, I think this guy wants to win. It's just not happening in Buffalo. And I think we're getting pretty close to seeing one of these two sides pulling the trigger here.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I you're right. Like, I'm closer to the situation. I'm thinking about it every day, unlike you, but I do like to get your perspective and others from outside of Buffalo, because sometimes I feel like I'm just flying too close to the sun, you know, and like you're almost blinded by it because you're so close to the situation. And I like getting outside perspective on it, and I'm glad that you're kind of in the same boat, or I'm getting to the same boat as that. Like, in the off season I was almost dismissing the idea. Like, what are you kidding me? Like, they're not trading Jack Eichel. Like, they gave away a season to be able to be in a position to make sure that he was at least what they were going to get when they tanked.
Which is funny because I thought in the off season, I actually felt more strongly that he was going to get traded in the off season than I did at the beginning of the year. Now I would say I'm probably at the same level of thoughts about a trade happening, but I fully believe that we were going to see a trade in the offseason. I think the Rangers were heavily rumored to be going after him, and there was a lot of speculation, a lot of trade talk, and ultimately I think the Sabres just said, look, we're not ready to do it yet. But now I think they're getting pretty close to being able to to wanting to pull a trigger, maybe go in a different direction and try and set this team up with more, you know, youth and more futures going forward.
Yeah, and Friedman did mention the Rangers specifically, and sometimes that could frustrate me and fans when it's like, oh, it just wants to go to the big city, New York, you know, like they're always the team that goes after your big stars. But it's less so even about like who the Rangers are in this circumstance, if that ever, you know, gets closer to being a real trade between the two sides. They make more sense to me almost because they just have one of the deepest pools of prospects and young talent in the league. They haven't quite, you know, blown the doors off of people yet, like Lafreniere and Kako. Adam Fox probably has done that. But like, to me, they just have such a deep pool of high-end prospects that that's really what really puts them in, you know, that top spot if you're thinking about them as a trade partner. Igor Shesterkin too. How did I not mention him? He might be he wouldn't be the most valuable of their young stars, but he's certainly valuable as well.
Well, who are some other teams that you're thinking about? Like, I'm sure, mm-hmm. you know, you go on the message boards, you have people calling into the station and there's all these conversations happening, you know, around the studios. Like, who are some other teams that you guys are hearing may have some interest here in Eichel that there could be a trade to be made?
That's a tough one because we haven't quite accepted the reality that we haven't, and not enough people to me have accepted the reality that it could happen, that we're at the point where we're talking about destinations. I think the people that are like me that are starting to realize that this could happen, we're almost left fighting with the other side right now, more so than looking at who, you know, could get him. I know like Chicago has been mentioned, but I haven't done enough homework on them to really know if that's realistic. Off the top of my head, I would think they don't have the assets. But again, I haven't really looked at them that deep yet. I think that might just be a situation where people want to, Patrick Kane, you know, like the salaries match. Like people would just want to always put Patrick Kane in Buffalo. That might just be that going on there. The Kings, I've heard also talked about before. And same thing, like I don't know who the Kings are sending back. Those are two teams, but very pedestrian research I've done so far. I'm like,
the Kings are interesting. The Kings are interesting, though, because they do have a lot of like high-level prospects that they could get in return.
Yeah, they do. Arthur Kaliev was the least theirs, right? He was blowing it up at the World Juniors. Alex Turcotte. Yeah, they've Quentin Byfield, obviously. They just picked him.
Samuel Pajamo. Like, they've got a few other guys. Tobias Bjornfot, a couple other defensive prospects. They've got a few young guys who they could turn out. Rasmus Kupari is another one who they may be able to let loose for a Jack Eichel type player.
Yeah, that they would be a team maybe to look even deeper into. All right, well, there's a little bit on the Sabres, and when we come back, a quick thing on Artemi Panarin from me and Mike, and then the Calgary Flames, and then later, who could be the first coach fired in the NHL? That's all coming your way on the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano.
RockAuto.com, a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano. Betting on the NHL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. All right, so Artemi Panarin has taken a leave of absence from the New York Rangers. There are allegations back in Russia that he beat up an 18-year-old girl back in 2011. and he's dealing with that whole situation right now. I don't really want to assume or even talk about that specific allegation, because there's not really a lot out there on like whether it is like true or not. Like, there's not, I don't even want to,
yeah,
I feel like it's reckless to almost go into it more than that. Of course, if you've got anything on that, feel free to jump in. But
I think it is important before, you know, not that we're jumping the gun, but just to lay out all the facts and lay out what exactly is going on and kind of, you know, both sides of the argument. So when it comes to Artemi Panarin, and you know, you can jump in if you've heard otherwise, or if you can expand on this, but a former coach of his has now come out and alleging that Artemi Panarin back in 2011, you know, beat the hell out of some poor girl back in 2011. And Panarin has vehemently denied these allegations and believes that this is an attack on him because of his political beliefs and the fact that he's been very vocal against Vladimir Putin. We know that, you know, Russia isn't America. It's not Canada. It is a communist nation. And talking ill against Vladimir Putin is not typically a smart thing to do within that country. And he's been very vocal about it. And he believes that this is a fabricated story in order to kind of ruin his career because he is against Putin. And this is his way of kind of sticking it, of Putin sticking it to Panarin. Whether or not these allegations are true or false, we do not know. He says that they are false. There are others that say it is true. We're not exactly sure. Obviously, this is something that is going to play out. But because of that, Panarin has opted to take a leave of absence, because apparently he fears that potentially he could have some family in danger that still live in Russia. So I believe is he going back to Russia? Is that what's going on here during this leave of absence? Do you know?
I didn't see where he's going. I read the story at the New York Post, and then I also read a story on it at ESPN. And neither of those I remember reading like where he was going. It was just that he wanted to take a leave of absence to deal with it.
Right. And I don't know if that meant go back to Russia and try and deal with it, or if he's going to try and get his family here over to America. I mean, if what he is saying is true, I think that would stand, you know, that would be grounds for seeking asylum here in America for his family. Mm-hmm. So it is a tricky and a tough situation, something that obviously us growing up in North America never, we never had to deal with anything like that. We never figured anything like that would even be a thing. But in other countries, it's, you know, this type of stuff kind of happens. And like I said, I was having this conversation with a buddy of mine yesterday. We were talking about it. And I said to him, man, whether this is true or not, I've seen House of Cards and I know what the government is capable of. And it's going to be a hard time for Artemi Panarin over the next little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think this means for the Rangers, at least in the meantime, on the ice? They are second to the bottom in the East Division, at least in point percentage, with 15 points in 16 games. They do have one more point than the Devils, but they've played three more games. And really, they have not had those young stars that we were just talking about last segment step up yet this year. Panarin has been like the one guy that could count on night in and night out. Pavel Buchnevich has played very well also, but that's kind of been it in terms of their consistent offensive production. So without Panarin, I already wasn't thinking the Rangers would make the playoffs from here on. I thought there was a great chance at the beginning of the season, but 16 games in, they weren't really on my radar to catch Philadelphia or Washington. And now with Panarin gone, I definitely don't think that they're going to do it.
Yeah, this is going to be tough. And we don't know how long Panarin's going to be out. Is it going to be a week, 2 weeks, 2 months, the rest of the year? We don't know. It's kind of an indefinite leave of absence. And we'll see what ends up happening. The thing that is unfortunate is, you know, you just said it. Panarin was really the only player offensively who was producing for the Rangers. I think he had, 16 or 15 points within 15 or 16 games. So a point per game player so far this year. And Mika Zibanejad has been a big disappointment this season. Alexis Lafreniere has been a disappointment. Just 2 goals in his rookie campaign, 16 games in. You know, there just hasn't been a lot of urgency and a lot of offense coming from this team. And actually, Lafreniere was just put up on a line with Panarin and Mika.
Okay.
And he scored. And then the very like next game or 2 days later, we hear this news about Panarin, and now he's not going to be there. So, you know, it's unfortunate also on ice because it seemed like Lafreniere was going to have a playmaker who was going to maybe help him a little bit. They had finally put him up on the top line, and now you take Panarin off of that line, and all of a sudden, you know, it doesn't look as scary anymore, and Lafreniere doesn't have as much help as it looked like he was going to have when it came to sparking his offense. So on the ice, this is certainly going to be a big loss for the Rangers. Mm-hmm.
And then let's jump over to the North Division before we take another quick timeout. And let's talk about the Calgary Flames. You mentioned, I'm forgetting the reporter right now that, or was there even a report that Calgary could kind of blow it up? Because yeah, even if
it was Friedman, actually, it was Friedman. Yeah. On the 31 Thoughts mentioned that it's very possible that the Flames could be thinking about kind of tinkering with their core and making some moves here. They came into last night's game, they ended up beating the Leafs 3-0, but the Leafs were decimated with injuries and it was just a weird game, but they were on a 3-game losing streak. They were embarrassed in back-to-back games against Edmonton. They hadn't been playing well for a couple of weeks, and it's just been a pretty underwhelming few years for that core. You know, I think there was a lot of expectation that when they brought in Jacob Markstrom, that this was finally going to be the year that they took a step, and it hasn't quite happened. They started off pretty good, but it's kind of been rocky the last couple of weeks. And so now there's some chatter that potentially they could be looking to tinker with their core and make some changes.
Yeah. And that is actually something we kind of also heard last year. And then the rest of their season didn't go that great, but it's like, all right, we're going to do this again. And I've always been wondering, like, all right, if they're, are they a bad season away from just it all being torn apart? And I wonder what that would mean, tinkering with the core, because the core group right now is basically under contract, except, well, I guess the first guy that's up is Johnny Gaudreau. And that's what he's the biggest name, I think, to talk about here. And he maybe also makes the most logical sense in that he doesn't have any no movement clause or no trade clause. He's only got 1 year left on his deal after this year. Given the caliber of the player, it's not a bad cap hit for an acquiring team to take on at $6.75 million. He's still productive. He's still young enough at 27. And I also think, though, that him being 27 means that if Calgary is going to move one big piece, it doesn't have to just be one, but if they're going to move one big piece, I think they probably choose to move Gaudreau over Matthew Tkachuk, who's 5 years younger. I think they probably keep Sean Monahan just because he's a centerman over Gaudreau playing on the wing. I don't know. Gaudreau just sticks out to me as the guy that makes sense here.
Certainly. I think Gaudreau is probably that guy that everyone's kind of circling and targeting as a trade candidate. I think last year there was the same rumblings that maybe the Flames are listening on Gaudreau as a way to change up their core, and that'd be a massive shock to the Flames because he's been their most elite offensive dynamo over the last, 5 years in the NHL. So, you know, Gaudreau's been a great player, a great soldier for the Flames, but at the end of the day, I think he would yield, much like Eichel, a lot of assets.
Yeah,
and it would be a pretty good way to try and to retinker, retool things, bring in some youth, maybe. Like they're it looks like they're aging a little bit. Like they don't have a lot of younger guys on their team.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of their core is pretty older. You know, like you said, Gaudreau, 27, Monahan's now 26. Like they're still relatively young. We got Backlund, 31, Lucic, 32.
And they just signed Jacob Markstrom, who's 31, to a 6-year deal.
Yeah, so, Chris Tanev, too, signed him to a 4-year deal at 31. Giordano, their captain, 37 years old. You know, so they've got some older guys on this team that, you know, maybe they want to inject a little bit more youth into this lineup.
I think that's what they should do. I wonder if they would just go move, if they moved Gaudreau, if they wouldn't care about the age and they were just moving him for almost like just a change of scenery, like someone else's star player like that, rather than go for the young pieces. But I don't know. I think that they should do what you're talking about.
Well, I talked about it on Locked On Leafs, actually. I discussed a potential trade between Johnny Gaudreau and William Nylander kind of being the main pieces going back for one another. I think Toronto would have to add a little bit, like maybe toss in a prospect or maybe even a first-round pick as well. But
I like
think
that, though.
Something there.
Yeah, I like that a lot, actually. Like, that's almost the perfect. I was searching for a name in my head that was not Jack Eichel for this, of like that type of move. And I think the Nylander idea is actually a really good one.
All right, who says no? Who says no on this one? Okay, William Nylander, a first round pick, and Timothy Liljegren for Johnny Gaudreau and Sam Bennett.
I think the Leafs. I don't know. That might be close. I think if anyone says no, though, it's the Leafs. I don't. Is the difference that big between you'll have to fill me in too if Timothy Liljegren is not what I have in my head right now in terms of value. But is Gaudreau worth a first and a good prospect more than William Nylander? I think I would want to say no to that.
I think he is, to be honest with you. Like, Nylander's been. Look, he's producing, but he hasn't been a great like he got benched the other night for the second half of the third period, you know. So it really, in my eyes, it looks like maybe Sheldon Keefe isn't seeing what he wants to see at a Nylander. I don't know if he's buying into the two-way game that Keefe is really trying to get Toronto to play, and that could, you know, end up costing him his spot here in Toronto, and maybe they look to move on. I thought maybe bringing in an elite guy like Johnny Gaudreau would certainly help if they were looking to move on from Nylander and bringing in another superstar stud. And you know, Nylander's a younger guy, but certainly I would look at Gaudreau as like a top end elite number one first line player, whereas Nylander's kind of on the line of a first or a really good second liner. So I think there is quite a gap between the two players. Liljegren's not even like his value is very low at this point. Like, Liljegren and Sam Bennett, maybe even a trade-off at this point. So
it's gotcha. That's a big difference then to me, because I don't even think I thought about Timothy Liljegren since he was in the NHL draft. So that is definitely going to change my opinion on that a little bit. All right, let's take a timeout. When we come back, the first coach to be fired in the NHL this season will be who? We'll do that when we come back with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano.
Football may be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. Bet online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports actions. Bet online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Little embarrassed to say it, I am watching this season of The Bachelor. Lines on a show like that, I'm actually intrigued by for the first time in my life. And BetOnline's where you want to be looking for that. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website, use your mobile device to sign up today, and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Remember to use the promo code LOCKEDON.
Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano. February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and success of Black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than the Game. Right now, you can hear Candace Cooper of Locked On Tar Heels and Erica Ayala of Locked On Women's Basketball discuss the opportunities and challenges that come with being a Black woman in sports. Subscribe to the Locked On Presents podcast feed on the radio.com app or wherever you get podcasts. All right, I've got a list of odds in front of me. The odds to be the next NHL head coach fired. There are two tied atop the list. Do you want to take any guesses, or you want me just to read the list off to you, and then we'll go over it?
My guesses would be your man's over in Buffalo as one, and David Quinn in New York as the other.
They are a little bit lower on the list. I have to admit, actually, these are from a week ago, and they haven't been updated since. So I don't know how much that would change it. It definitely changed it more so from what your opinion would be on this list, because the top of the list is DJ Smith of the Ottawa Senators and Jeff Blashill of the Detroit Red Wings, plus at both at plus 450. Travis Green of the Canucks at plus 600, Bob Bugner and David Quinn right after that. You actually have to go through, I mean, way too many guys here. Dave Tippett is ahead of Ralph Kruger. Dallas Eakins is ahead of Ralph Kruger. Kruger has the same odds as Paul Maurice. So I think if these odds were to come out tomorrow, they would be different, and Kruger would be much higher in this list. I think he should be much higher on this list. But overall, who do you think the first guy could be fired will be?
You know what? So before I answer that question, I'll tell you this. I think there's probably at least one head coach out there that is lucky that he still has a job thanks to COVID. I think that there are some teams out there that are really reluctant to fire their coach right now because they don't want to have two on their salary, knowing that they're operating at a loss this season. So I look at a team like Buffalo, who, you know, you could tell me more, but it seemed like the Pagulas have been penny pinching a little bit over in Buffalo since the pandemic really started. They've rolled back on their salaries. I know that they cut a lot of salaries during the off seasons. And so I feel like a guy like Ralph Kruger, if this were a regular season after the start that they've had, I just get the sense that he would be on the chopping block by now if this were a regular season, but it's not. So will we even see a firing throughout this season? That's a question that I honestly wonder, just because of the weird year that it's going to be through COVID and the fact that to bring in a new coach, it's just going to be, first of all, they're going to have to like quarantine for a few weeks, and then they're going to, well, I guess in the States, you don't really have to, but in Canada, it would take a couple of weeks to quarantine if you were to let DJ Smith go. And also just, it's just such a weird year. You know, you're operating at a loss. Are you going to want to pay two coaching salaries? Most owners at this point would probably say no. I know in Vancouver, the Aquilinis, they came out and gave Travis Green a vote of confidence a couple of weeks ago. They've actually played quite well since then. So I think the seat has cooled down on Travis Green. But I don't think that it was ever hot, to be honest, because I don't think that they were willing to fire him and then pay another head coach to be in his place for the rest of the year. And I think there's a few organizations like that. So I want to say that first and foremost. I don't even know if we're going to get a firing. But if there are two teams who are really struggling right now that I think could benefit from a coaching change, and maybe three, I'll say. But Ralph Kruger from the Buffalo Sabres, I think, probably needs to go. I feel like you share my sentiment on that one.
I do, yes.
I think David Quinn of the New York Rangers, this team is vastly underachieving. You know, they're just not getting it done. Zibanejad can't get going. His deployment of Alexis Lafreniere has been really poor to this point, and Kaapo Kakko hasn't been able to progress, and you just wonder if it's a coaching issue and you know, they just need a new philosophy in there. And then I think maybe even Nashville, you know, I think John Hines is really struggling out there, and it seems like they're kind of at this point going to be sellers, maybe even, I'm hearing, at the deadline. And when was the last time you heard that the Predators were going to be sellers? You know, they've been such a good team for so long, but just 3-7 in their last 10, and they just keep going downhill. So I think Nashville and John Hines could be another coach that could find himself out of a job rather soon.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought Nashville. That was the team I was waiting to bring up because they, right, I don't know if I have ever seen them be sellers at the deadline for my entire life. And they are they're at least built to try to win right now. Like, they've got veteran players on big contracts. Like, Matt Duchene's got 6 years left. Philip Forsberg has got a couple years left. Victor Arvidsson's got 4 years left. Colton Sissons has 6 years left. Roman Josi, 8 years. Ryan Ellis, 7. Like, they have these guys. The guys, the core members of that team are there, and they are under contract. And to me, the bar should be set very high for them, especially with the success that they had a couple of years ago. So I think that they make a lot of sense. And that might be, if I wanted to put my money on one guy, him being lower than Kruger and Maurice, even at plus 1700, I think I'd like John Hines for this bet just because of where they are. Like Detroit and Ottawa being at the top of the list is weird to me because I don't know what they're supposed to be. Detroit's a little bit different of a situation than Ottawa. Like I don't think the Senators should have came into the season thinking they could be contenders or
no,
anything.
No, they weren't.
So the Red Wings, the Red Wings are different in that Blashill's been there forever, and I don't really know what they're looking for there out of him.
Like, well, that's the thing. I think both of these teams know that they're bad. They suck. They're not going to win a lot of games, and that's exactly what's happening. So to suggest that, you know, just because they're, you know, the two worst teams in the league, which means they should have the best odds of firing their coaches, I think is insanely tone deaf, to be quite honest with you. So
it almost seems lazy to me.
Yeah, very lazy. I would
let's
not
just take
say
the top. Yeah, let's just take the bottom teams and throw their coaches at the top of the list. Like that.
If you want to use my theory earlier about, you know, penny pinching teams not looking to pay two coaches,
right,
there is nobody, no one who's more of a cheap ass than Eugene Melnyk, the owner in Ottawa. And there's no way that he's firing DJ Smith and going to be able to pay for a completely new coaching staff to take over in his place. No
yes.
chance.
Definitely not. And then Jeremy Colliton, who I was thinking could be on the hot seat earlier in the season with Chicago.
Coach of the year.
They've turned it around. Like, credit to the Blackhawks. Like, I thought they were going to be either the worst or one of the worst teams in hockey. And they were kind of on the path to that early on, but they've won 7 of their last 10. They're getting good goaltending all of a sudden. Like, they're getting production from Pius Suter. Yeah, Lankinen, right, is the goalie?
Yeah.
They're just out of nowhere. Chicago, like, all right, not bad. Like, maybe they're going to squeak into the playoffs. Colliton is not on the radar anymore for coaches to be fired. Right. He might be. Would you say he's more likely to be coach of the year at this point than fired? I think I would say that.
100%. And on that, who would you say maybe are a couple of favorites to be coach of the year at? What are we? We're probably at the
we're about
a third of the way. Yeah. Third of the way through the year. You know, who would you say are some of the coach of the year candidates so far?
I haven't thought about this a lot yet, but just by looking at the team so far this year, I think I would go with Joel Quenneville. Again, I have not spent a lot of time thinking about that, but Florida has never been able to find consistency in their games for years. And it's only 17 games in, but for them to be 12-3-2, I think I would go with Quenneville without looking at it deeper.
Well, and after losing Hoffman, losing Dadonov, I think everyone was expecting the worst out of Florida this year, definitely for them to take a step back. And, well, they haven't. They've been really, really good. They've gotten a lot of offense. I think Huberto is a dark horse candidate for MVP. Chris Driedger, a goaltender, is coming out of nowhere for him. He's playing exceptionally well. And, yeah, Coach Quenneville's got this team cooking right now. So, Florida, they're doing well, and I agree with you. I think Coach Q is probably at the top of the list right now when it comes to Coach of the Year candidates.
Yep. All right, well, that's going to do it for us today in the Locked On NHL podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will be back next Tuesday with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano here in the Locked On NHL podcast.